consideration of the actions of the chairperson of the committee. I will now call for nominations for a person to act as chairperson. Honorable Menzana.
Chairperson of concession. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I propose the name of
Honorable Kaiso to chair.
Thank you, Mr. Menzana. Honorable Kaiso, do you accept the nomination? Thank you. Are there any more nominations for acting chairperson? Yes. Is there a seconder? Honorable Tihale.
Thank you very much. I want to support the proposed name of the week of the committee.
Thank you, madam. Honorable Kaiso has been nominated. Yes, Mr. Tozo.
Thank you, Secretary. I wanted to recommend the name of the EFF, but they didn't support us in Springbok, so I'm withdrawing my nomination.
Okay, thank you. In the absence of...
It's not available.
In the absence of any more nominations, I will ask Mr. Kaiso to take the seat as acting chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, to entrust me with the responsibility of running this meeting today in the absence of the chairperson. And hopefully we are going to work in such a way that we show the same unity when we started with the process. Primarily, the purpose of today's meeting is to get the presentation from the Public Service Commission on the outcome of the medium-term budget statement that was done recently in the National Assembly. But firstly, let me also say that we sitting as we welcome the launch of the investment conference in the country, which is going to be a step that is going to ensure that our people get jobs, also addressing the issue of unemployment in the country, and also that of the economy, because our economy is being challenged, highly challenged. So hopefully that we will see a lot of progress in that regard. So also want to welcome the members and the guests from the Public Service Commission who have joined us in this meeting. All the members are welcome. So maybe before we start with the meeting, indicate that my anticipation is that by at least half past 12, the committee works very well in time, we'll be able to have finished our job. So that I know that there are tasks that are ahead immediately after half past 12, but I just pray where I'm seated that we are finished by that time. So let me first, give an opportunity to just quickly introduce ourselves from the table. I'm Policy Le Kaiso, a member of the school committee.
Morning, Chair, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Orla Mlenga, member of the committee.
Good morning. Members of office, Dennis Joseph, member of this committee.
Ashok Sarapen, also a member of this committee.
Thank you very much. Good morning. My name is Mati Pagodekhalo, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. My apologies for the arrival. I'm Dipo Pete, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Honorable Matasa. I'm a member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Augustina Komani, the member of the Committee on Appropriations.
I'll also ask the guest to join themselves.
Thank you, Chair, for having me. Good morning, Chair. Mm. Honorable Chair, good morning, honorable members. I am from the PSC, and my name is Mwene Tilebalno.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Irene Matenja. I'm the DDG responsible for monitoring and evaluation in the Public Service Commission.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Can I get the apologies for item number 3?
Chairperson, yes, Chairperson, we received 4 apologies for today's meeting. The first one is from the Chairperson, Mr. Kutelezi. The second one is from Mr. Kwankwa, who is abroad. Mr. Sheikh Imam and Ms. Ntlangwini are both off sick. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Chair. Thanks, Chair. I think for record purposes, let's put myself and Honorable Komane, we shall be leaving at 10:12.
Thank you very much. I really want to say maybe what is said, that you should respect time. We should stick to that because me and you also had a meeting at 12:30.
So, honorable members, I think we'll keep that in our mind as we engage with the deliberation. So, I think now I'm going to give this opportunity to the Public Service Commission, the chairperson, to lead the delegation through this presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson,
and Chairperson
of the Commission.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Standing Committee on Appropriation extended the invitation to the Public Service Commission to make comments on the medium term budget policy statement and
okay.
This is what.
Sorry, just a moment, Chair. Honorable members, let me start by also apologizing. We're supposed to project the presentation. I'm feeling with a challenge, IT challenge here. That is why the presentation won't be projected. And we want to apologize for that. So we'll use our hard copies, those who do not have the laptops or iPads available. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The PSC, the Public Service Commission, consists of 14 commissioners. There's a single PSC in the Republic. 5 of the commissioners are based at the national office, and the 9 each is serving in a province. In a nutshell, that is the what I wanted to say about the PSC. But the comments, coming to the subject matter of today, the comments, the presentation outline is going to be the introduction, PSC areas of oversight, SCOA, and then the third one is SCOA requested information, under which we have A, strategies available to significantly improve management practices in the public service. B, discuss issues of governance across the public service. C, expenditure against budget. versus performance for national departments for 2018-2019 financial year. D, opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money. Five, four, contribute remarks. Five, these are lectures. Under the introduction, the Public Service Commission is an independent body established in terms of Chapter 10 of the Constitution to promote the constitutional values and principles, especially those governing public administration, as set out in Section 185 of the Public Service. The Public Service Commission's main objective is to provide effective oversight over the public service nationally and provincially. The Public Service Commission is accountable to the National Assembly and it also reports to relevant provincial legislatures. In executing its oversight mandate, the Public Service Commission provides advice, makes recommendations, proposes measures, and gives directions. Public Service Commission areas of oversight. The constitutional oversight mandate of the PSC is wide. And in summary, covers the following areas. Organization of the public service. The structural arrangements of departments in the public service. Administration of the public service, which includes all procedures, policy frameworks, accountability mechanisms, etc., that ensure the functioning of the public service. Personnel procedures and practices of the public service. For example, recruitment, transfers, promotions, and dismissals. Public administration practices. These include all the functions and activities executed by the public service to provide a service to the people. Adherence to applicable procedures in the public service, which includes compliance within the letter and law prescribed rules, policies, and procedures. The extent to which the values and principles set out in Section 185 of the Constitution are complied with. From here going forward, I am going to hand over to my colleague, Ms. Irene Matei. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. To start off, in the MTVPS, the Minister of Finance outlined 10 growth ingredients, and the first ingredient that he spoke to is efficient and capable state. Now, this resonates with priority six of government, which is capable and ethical as well as developmental state. These values and principles, as you can see in slide number 5, they talk to good governance and how government is supposed to run its business in a manner that is efficient and effective so that we can be able to achieve our triple challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. But more so, the constitutional values and principles are the bedrock of the work of the Public Service Commission, and as we go along with the presentation, we'll be talking to some of these issues. I also need to emphasize, Honorable Chairperson, as part of our mandate, the promotion of the values and principles is that they outline what South African public administration should represent, but more so set out what the public should expect when they interact with public institutions. On slide number 6, we are presenting just the flywheel, also taking cue from the minister's growth ingredients. The first one, which is efficient and capable state. We say that for us to build that, we need a stable and capable leadership. A stable and capable leadership that will bring strong institutions that will be able to stand the test of scrutiny as well as ratings. And then we can be able to have sound public administration with good governance and financial management. Therefore, government will be able to give proper direction and accountability and lead to effective service delivery and performance and implementation of government programs, and will be able to attract professional staff, ethical and staff that are tied and have got morale in serving its people. As we move on to slide 7, Honorable Chairperson, we'll be taking you through the strategies to significantly improve management practices in the public service. I would like to start with the issue of delegation, is our bullet number 2. Some of the issues that we come across as Public Service Commission in the manner in which we do our work is the fact that powers have not been delegated to appropriate performance levels in the public service. In that regard, we have got challenges of people who are expected to be implementing government programs, but they don't have the delegated powers, particularly when we talk about financial delegations, and therefore it's time for service delivery. We see this mostly when we visit districts, particularly in the areas of your health and education, where decisions are supposed to be taken immediately, but they're not taken because they're centralized elsewhere. I would like to move on to the next issue, which is the issue of planning, coordination, and costing. It is important to acknowledge that public service, by its very nature, is very complex. We have got different spheres of government. We have got different planning cycles of your the public service, national and provincial, which is different from the local planning and budgeting cycle. However, at the end of the day, government requires all spheres of government and all sectors of government to work together to implement government programs. And therefore, it is important that we plan, we coordinate, and we cost accordingly so that all the plans are integrated across all spheres of government for effective implementation. I think a classical example here is the issue that was raised by Minister around issues of infrastructure, implementation, where he also highlighted that some of the challenges that we have is the planning, which we need to improve on that. But more so, again, we also need to improve on the issue of long-term planning in our country. The next issue is the reconfiguration of government. At the moment, we have commenced with this program of rationalizing departments, but ministries as well as functions. And we're hoping that this process will also cascade to other spheres of government, such as the provincial government, but also to SOEs that we have in the country, and some of which, as proposed by the National Development Plan, we need to take a decision whether they shouldn't be subsumed within departments as program, so that we can see efficiencies and we can be able to do more with less. The issue of organizational performance is still pretty much tied to the planning and coordination, and what we're saying is that there should be better support system for underperforming departments to ensure effective and consistent service delivery to all citizens. An example that one can make here is that if you look at the health sector, normally one of the things that they complain about is the issue of infrastructure, which says that no matter how efficient the Department of Health is, if it has got issues around infrastructure, and those that are responsible for ensuring that infrastructure at hospital and all levels of health is supported to do its work, we're going to have a problem. So it's very important that departments whose responsibility is to support other departments are also well capacitated and ensure that those departments are able to effectively execute their mandate. The next issue that we have is about the issue of human resources. And this is really linked to the wage bill. I think it's a foregone conclusion that our compensation of employees is very high. We need to deal with that. Over the last few years, we've already started dealing with this matter. But what we're saying is that there's a need to ensure improved productivity of the public service workforce and that balance with reskilling and retraining approach so that we get value for money in those that are still in the employ of the government. Another thing that is important as we're talking about the cutting of compensation for employees is the fact that we need to be also careful, particularly around your occupation-specific dispensation, your nurses, doctors, and police, just as an example. The Public Service Commission, when it releases service delivery sites, we find that we still have a challenge in these areas of work, where there are shortages. If you look at education, for instance, our teacher-learner ratio is still skewed from the standards and the norms that we have set for ourselves. But also, as we rationalize the cuts in the compensation for employees, we need to be careful in the manner in which we go about. There is a view that perhaps we need to cut on administration. What we found when we go to service delivery sites is that there are cuts that shouldn't be happening. For instance, at one hospital that we visited, we found that we had disposed of our porters and our mutual staff. Eventually, the mutual was dysfunctional, and the mutual services had to be outsourced at a huge cost. So it's important that we also think very carefully and come up with a very calculated approach in terms of this cutting so that we don't find ourselves outsourcing the very same services, which we view as non-core to to the functions of the department. Honorable Chair, I'm going to move on now to issues of governance across the public service. These are the issues that Public Service Commission deals with. Slide number 9, the area of high standards of professional ethics as Public Service Commission go on with doing its work. We look into the issue of financial disclosure of senior members of government. On this slide, basically what we are saying is that for 2018-19, we had 97% disclosure rate, which means we fell short of just 3% of all the senior managers disclosing their financial interests. On slide 10, what we're saying on this slide is basically that 63 of the SMS members did not disclose their financial interests, which is in contravention of the regulations. What worries us is, what is it that people are not disclosing and why they are not disclosing? Could it be that there is something that government should be aware of? Because when people don't disclose, therefore they have got an opportunity also to do an ethical, to be conducting an ethical behavior in that regard. So the departments that we are highlighting on the end of those slides, on the end of that slide is where forms have not been submitted repeatedly. That is Defense, National School of Government, and Public Service and Administration. On slide 11, we are showing, according to the requirements for compliance with the financial disclosure, HODs are supposed to disclose to their EAs, executive authorities, and those forms are supposed to be submitted to the Public Service Commission so that they can be scrutinized, so that we can see whether there is potential or actual conflict of interest. During the year 2018-2019, if you look at departments 1 up to 7, those departments, they did disclose to their executive authorities, but the executive authorities did not send the disclosure form to the Public Service Commission. The only form that we received was for the Department of Health, which was only received on the 14th of August, but the rest of those forms are still not with the Public Service Commission. We are followed up in that regard. As I said earlier on, the most important in this area is for us to detect whether there is potential conflict of interest or actual conflict of interest that we pick up as we scrutinize the forms. Now, for 2017-18, what we found when we did the scrutiny of the forms is that there was 1,092 potential cases of conflict of interest and 12 actual cases of conflict of interest. As we move on to slide number 12 on financial misconduct, what we're picking up very briefly, if you look at the second column there, is that for 2018-2019, when you look at the overall amount involved for financial misconduct, there was 253 million. This is the information that we draw from departments as we request them to report to the Public Service Commission in terms of financial misconduct cases. However, we are very much worried if the amount of money that was involved for financial misconduct only came to 253 million, which is not a good representative of the issues of financial misconduct in the public service, particularly if you compare with the latest information from the Auditor General that talks to about 61.4 billion of irregular and wasteful expenditure. What it tells us is that departments are probably selective or lenient in dealing with issues of financial misconduct, and therefore there is no consequence management in departments in matters relating to financial misconduct. As we move on, we deal with the issue of payment of invoices by departments. Here, what we're saying is that if you look at the three financial years, number of invoices are going down. Invoices older than 30 days and not paid, the number is going up, but the value is going up. So if I were to make an example, you would see that for 2017-18 April, we had 15,000 invoices. However, for 2019-2020, we had 2,955 invoices. And making comparison in terms of the values of those invoices, for 2017-18, it was 135 million. But when you look at 2019-2020, it's 1.1 billion. And if you look at the extreme right column, you would see that those figures are going up. So we are paying the invoices as government. However, the values of those invoices is still very high and it's still very worrying. What we have picked up, Chairperson, is that the bulk of these invoices that are not paid are largely at the health and education sector, particularly in the provinces. And what we have also picked up is that there are certain provinces, as we're speaking now, they are continuing to procure outside of their procurement plan. So in essence, they are procuring services knowing very well that they're not going to pay because they've already depleted their budget. The issue also that we want to emphasize here around non-payment is that when small businesses are not paid, we actually compromise the very same goal of government on economic growth, particularly in the SME sector, where we have seen some of them that have already closed down. But overall, the issue of payment culture is a problem in government. So if one can make an example, we have got a problem where national and provincial departments are owing billions to municipalities. Municipalities are owing entities such as ESCOM and Water Board, and departments are also owing Office of State Attorney to huge amounts. So we do have a problem around how we manage payments in government. As we move on, we just give an example in terms of the national department, where we have got those huge invoices that are not paid, which is water sanitation, public works, agriculture. And you see that some of the invoices, as I said earlier on, we're dealing with a small number of invoices. However, the amount is huge. If you take women, for instance, they had one invoice of 1.7 million, and surely there is no business that would survive if it's owed that invoice of 1.7 million. And here we're talking legitimate invoices that are not contested by government. Now, all of these things, Chairperson, you would see that they have got an implication in the manner in which we run our business, but also the financial side of issues. As we move on to precautionary suspensions, these are officials that are put on long periods of suspensions, whilst they are also earning a salary. We are seeing a bit of a decline there in 2018-2019, where 473 officials were suspended for periods of exceeding 30 days to an amount of 50 million, but still it's unacceptable because what it means is that in their absence, drawing salary, their work has to be done by other people within government. Then, Chairperson, on slide 16, we're moving to performance against 10 targets. What we're saying on this slide is that departments set themselves a particular target that they're going to achieve over a financial year. When we look across the board in terms of national departments, we find these departments that we are projecting on slide 16 that have not met 100% of their targets. At the lowest was the Department of Energy that only achieved 28% of their targets, followed by military veterans and so on and so on. Now, some of these departments are very critical to the delivery of services and some of the programs that were announced by Minister in the MCBPS, they actually reside within this department. Therefore, we raise the concern if these departments are not able to meet their targets. An example, again, is that if you look at the MCBPS, it emphasizes that 48% of the consolidated spending will go to social development, health, and education. However, when you have this kind of performance by the third department, it gets worrying. Now, on slide 17, we also show departments that have underspent below the norm of 98%, and we just really slicing those. But the interesting thing, again, is that when you go back to the previous slide, you'll find that departments such as military veterans, they achieved only 44% of their target, and even their budget, they spent only 44%. They spent only 86% of their budget. Now, moving over to performance achievement versus SMS performance rewards. What we picked up, which is very much worrying, particularly around very same departments, if one can make an example, is that for energy, where you had only 28% of the plan targets achieved, you have got 3 out of 60 SMS members that received their performance bonus. And I think the highlight more is on the environmental affairs, where you have got 146 SMS members who obtained performance bonus, whereas only 66% of their plan targets was achieved. But also, it's important to indicate that the MPSA has already determined that the annual expenditure on performance bonus set at a minimum percentage for 1.5 in 18-19, 0% in 2019-20, and it will cascade down to 0% in 2021-2022, which means we'll be phasing out the performance bonus up until a proper review of the system of performance management and development.
system. So they will also realize some savings from government in terms of the money that we're paying for performance bonuses, particularly when we are paying people when their plan targets are not achieved. Chairperson, as I move on to slide 19, we're looking at the opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money, the first one being utilization of consultants. On this slide, what we're saying is that we have got departments that are spending a lot of money on consultants, but what is worrying us is that measures are not put in place where we need to have a long-term plan in terms of those things where we do not have capacity or how we're going to deal with them in future instead of relying on consultants. The first one is telecommunication postal services. You'll see there just highlighting where there are increases. In 17-18, they spent 3 million. In 18-19, they spent 138 million. I'm just making examples there. In transport, they spent 20 million, then it escalated to 82 million. Environmental affairs, they were at 40 million, they escalated to 81 million. When you go to slide 20, we demonstrate what these monies are used for. Obviously, in certain instances, it's used for the core business of the department, but in other instances, it gets us worried. For instance, if you look at rural development, an amount of about 6 million was used for legal services, 53.7 million was used for state attorney legal advice, and we also have about 10 million that was used for administration and support services. In relation to the rest of the other departments, the money was used for issues that have to do with the core business of the department. Now, moving on again with opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money, Honorable Chairperson, we'll go back to the growth ingredients as articulated by the Minister in the MCDTS, the first one being effective and a capable state. And we say that for government to have this effective and a capable state, we need to build capacity. There is an urgent need for us to build the required capacity at organizational level, at technical level, but also at individual level. Developmental states do not materialize by default. There are plans that are put in place as investment around building capacity. The NDP has alluded quite a lot about this issue and also the unevenness of capacity in government and at various levels. So we need to pay attention to that. The fourth industrial revolution, we need to consider the use and application of information technology to enhance service delivery. But also this would require us to have a careful engagement with labor. We need to look at the procurement regime and consider issues that should be streamlined so that we have got an effective SVM unit, particularly issues such as the price referencing system, where government would be able to cost and decide that certain items that we know that we procure in government will be procured at the same price, irrespective of where we are procuring, because the money comes from the same pot. There's an issue again around litigation against government. We know that this matter was very rife within the RAF, but now it has swept over to the medical legal claims. This is an area where we really need to pay attention to, as a lot of money is being spent on litigation. The governance of SOEs is very important. The NDP has alluded quite a lot on this matter. We need the rationalization. We're sitting at about 700 SOEs. As I said earlier on, some of them have to be rationalized. Either they're done away or they're subsumed within departments. However, this should follow a proper study so that we can decide which SOEs we need and which SOEs we don't need. We're also raising an issue around some of the panels that have been created lately, and say, shouldn't we also consider whether some of those panels and commissions could not be done by, for instance, institutions supporting democracy that are already existing so that we can also save money. Chairperson, in conclusion, we say we need a fine balancing act to manage performance and service delivery against the expenditure cuts at all tiers of government. We are also aware that 21 billion during 2020, 2021, and 29 billion in 2021-22 will be taking place in terms of goods and services. Therefore, these cuts are likely to be felt by large problems and transfer. We are also aware, Chairperson, that this committee interacts with other institutions and other government departments. And what we are saying here is that
during engagements, which is something that we are also doing as Public Service Commission, we would like this the committee to also help in terms of taking some of the issues forward. For instance, how National Treasury will ensure that there is budget alignment to key priorities. An example here is the district service delivery model, which will require national department, provincial department, local government to converge within a particular district, irrespective of our different planning frameworks and budget time frames, but to also ensure that we work in the planning in a manner that it has improved planning, coordination, and costing. With regards to AG, we know about the Public Audit Management Act, and it is important that we begin to engage AG in terms of how far are we in terms of implementing the certificate of debt to HODs, particularly those that have incurred high and huge expenditures in terms of irregular expenditure. The reconfiguration of government, what are the efficiency prospects for the reconfiguration of government given the wage bill? Having said all of the above information, at the heart of this is the extent to which we all help to embed the constitutional values and principles, as these are the foundation for effective, efficient, and economic use of resources. Chairperson, I'll leave it at that. The rest of the slide is basically just amidst just in terms of the spending and achievement of targets for departments. Thank you.
Thank you. Public Service Commission. Honourable members, I will be done with the presentation.
Yes.
So I'm going to let members to engage on the presentation. In fact, I thought you were going to take an hour, but you are very spot on in terms of presenting this. So hopefully the members will also follow the queue in dealing with the presentation. So let me open up and take hands, no hands for engagement from the members. And thereafter, the commission will respond on the clarities or engagement submitted. Can I see hands? So that I don't forget.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Dikali was complaining about the chair, that the chair is not giving her the necessary ability to just sit upright. Chairperson, thank you very much to the Public Service Commission for their presentation. And it's a very interesting a presentation, especially coming from the angle here, performance in the public service and how departments are performing against their intended objectives or targets. Chairperson, on slide 7, there's an indication that there is better support systems that is probably needed for underperforming departments. One would want to know which departments should we as Parliament focus on and really hold accountable for support to different departments, especially in view of the fact that if you go down with the presentation, including on other matters of disclosures as well as performance against targets and the expenditure of the budget, the very same departments that are expected to give support would also be found wanting. Like, for example, the Department of Public Service and Administration, to which the Public Service Commission reports. One would want probably to know in the engagement of the Public Service Commission also with the Department of Public Service and Administration, what type of additional capacity would be needed for the Department of Public Service and Administration. But equally so, if you look at support needed for municipalities, you'd need departments like COCTA, departments like National Treasury, equally to give that particular type of support. So which departments do you as the Public Service Commission indicate that they require urgent and improved support from government to be able to do this particular work? The other thing, Chairperson, that is worrying is this non-compliance with financial disclosure, these things. You know, you look at about 9 departments where financial interests have not been disclosed, or, for example, others, the disclosures have been submitted to the HOD, but the executing authority, which is the minister in this instance, has not submitted or has not signed off. And you would ask yourself, what has the commission done to make sure that they put pressure prior to the intended date of delivery? Because for me, this is one of the areas definitely that the executing authority would then have with as a performance indicator with the HOD or the DG. And the non-performance then by the minister himself or herself would then have an implications. And the Public Service Commission needs to actually report such behavior to the president. But the ministry that is supposed to do that is also a chiropractor, the Public Service and Administration. So then it tells you there is something that is just not happening right here. Equally so, the School of Government, which is supposed to be the institution that is enabling and training our public servants, is equally found to be wanting. So, Chairperson, I think it is important that we ask the Public Service Commission to put pressure on these departments to deliver. Then there's the issue of payment of invoices. Chairperson, we truly need to probably as a committee engage with the different portfolio committee chairpersons with regard to this particular issue so that they can then help us track them in their different portfolios, because that is the level at which they would be able to deal with this thing. You know, you look at the one of the Department of Women, I'm asking myself, what services was this department procuring from one supplier or one service provider at this amount? Every year they reflect like that. Like, for example, now you would say it's 1.7 for 2019-20, but 2019-20 is not yet come to an end. Maybe it will increase at a later stage. We need to also check on that. You'd remember in the previous appropriations process, we're given an indication of the lack of capacity and the lack of utilization of the compensation of employees budget by this department to acquire the requisite skills to develop policy. So one would want to know what type of services was procured here. I know that in one of the slides there's an indication of event promotion, but I don't think that could be an ideal situation, because we need this department to make sure that it can track policy, it can ensure mainstreaming of gender-related policies across government departments. This is also, in a way, Chairperson, a support department for other departments, especially with regard to gender mainstreaming and gender or engendering the policies of government. So if this department is challenged like this, what would then happen? The other thing is, all departments, you get worried when performance against planned target. Rural development, 58%. Chairperson, I'm going to raise this because I raised it yesterday in the meeting with the PBO as well as the public, I mean the Finance and Fiscal Commission, that lack of delivery in this department gives you the picture of the challenges that we have with regard to rural development and the challenges of the mass exodus of our people from the rural areas into the urban centers, where they live in squalor, in shacks, and in uninhabitable environments. For example, you would have in Mamelodi, there's an area where the Department of Energy said it is unelectrifiable because of the way in which people have settled there. It's just a squatter camp on top of a squatter camp. You look at the situation here in Philippi in the Western Cape, where every time there's the Samora Machel shacks burning because people are living on top of each other. When it is raining, even here in the Western Cape, you'll see how our people live. So it means that the interventions that needs to be done to make sure that our people in the rural areas have got water, electricity, and the basic services, a good road that allows them to have access to healthcare, is not happening. But equally so, land restitution and land redistribution. The delays in this particular area shows, and one would, as this committee, want to recommend it, we need to call this department, because we have been told that since 1994 to now, there was only about 4% of land that has been transferred to the previously disadvantaged. And now we're talking about a massive rollout of government-owned land that has been identified that needs to be distributed. How are they going to be able to do that when already that which they themselves have determined is not implemented? But I also get worried. We need to inform the presidency. How can the presidency perform at 67%? And if we talk about the presidency, we talk about the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. So how are they not able to evaluate the performance of the presidency? So for me, these are some of the departments that are truly worrying. Also, how do you reward people who have not delivered? There is a tendency, Public Service Commission, in departments where officials will tell you that we have delivered on our targets. Like, for example, you have the Department of Energy achieving 28%. Those who have achieved in their component or unit would say we want our performance bonuses because we have delivered. Forgetting that they are part of the bigger whole. They don't look at the department holistically. And that is the responsibility of the DG and the minister, to make sure that the department as a whole performs equally. So the information, oh, last chapter, how do we agree and consider, or how do you evaluate a department who have got legal units with people who at times carry the title advocate, but they are legal costs, which actually reflect in the consultants type or professional services item of the budget. What are those who are in the department first and foremost employed for, as opposed to getting additional capacity from the outside? Are they just there as paper pushers to make sure that they can then tell the minister and the DG, this is the legal opinion that we need, and always go for the legal opinion from external? So with this a few words, maybe Chairperson, if given an opportunity, I can come back later. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank and welcome the presentation. And just to note a concern in terms of the performance that's been presented to us, it is a worrying factor that would find the department like the presidency not performing, whilst you are expecting the same department to host the monitoring and evaluation of the other departments. But then it would save, as well say to us, that is why we sometimes say we don't need these other departments, because by them not complying or not performing, would as well say, by virtue of us having a department which is not accountable to monitoring and evaluating, so would be seated here wanting. But anyway, be that as it may, Chairperson, let me also check on slide 7 and check with the presenter to say they have indicated that there is a need for better support for underperforming departments. And one would then ask as to exactly, we need to know to which departments are we referring to here, so that when we know, we would then be in a position to say, these departments need urgent support in terms of their priority. But then, what support exactly would be needed in terms of us assisting them? And again, Chairperson, in view of the PSC, what should exactly happen in terms of consequent management? Because in all the presentations that one would be engaged with, you would always hear that there is lack of consequent management. But then, as they have outlined in their presentation, maybe seated here, they would maybe assist in terms of helping into, yes, there are issues and there need to be consequent management that has been taken, but there is none. But then in their view, what is it that should happen? And Chairperson, again, in respect of the late payment, as part of your mandate, I just would like to know, have you conducted a thorough assessment in terms of to understand what is the contributing factors in each department? Because we would always hear that there is one reason, different reason from one department to the other. But then maybe having had the reasons that would be contributing to the late payment. Because one would be seated, and in the presentation, most of them, that as you have indicated, Chairperson, you'd find that the service providers have submitted legitimate invoices, and they are seated there with the department, and they are not being paid. But then we would again find that it is said that there are one reason different to the other. Maybe then if you can maybe find out which factors are affecting each and every department, so that when we address them, we don't address them in a balloon approach. And Chairperson, maybe if one may ask, of all the disclosures that were done from the financial interest disclosures that were done from the accounting officers, did the PSC identify if there are major issues that would need the attention of the Parliament in terms of the disclosures? Because it is a worrying factor that there are some who did not comply, and some did not even submit the financial interest disclosure. And what Osi said here, one as well, ask himself or herself to say, but why? Why are people not submitting these disclosures? And I think, Chairperson, let me maybe end here, and maybe I will have a standby. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zola. Thanks, Chairperson.
Mine, I got three. Because to some extent I have been covered. Chair, one on this aspect of, you know how passionate I am when it talks to labor. This question of cutting of employees. Now today, we are introduced into another aspect that don't jump into cutting employees if you are looking at dealing with the wage bill, but also consider the shortages that are there. What, Commissioner, can you advise in this aspect? Reality being that the wage bill is there, escalated. We are not sure how perfect the government is, and its state-owned company in terms of the capacity to reskill and upskill so as to be able, perhaps, to be able to move around your workforce without actually cutting on them, but at the same time dealing with the wage bill. I'm not sure if my question is clear. The second one, Chair, would be on these provinces with perpetual procurement, regardless of whether they will be able or not to pay. With whom does the buck stop? I'm asking this question, Commissioner, because my understanding is that you have got the provincial DG, while at the same time you have got this other line of communication, your MECs and ministers, which I understand there will always be technical min-max before the actual min-max phase. So now where do you begin to locate the responsibility? The last one, Chair. I asked the Chair this question from the AG. AG answered their own way. The impact of expenditure, when I asked this question from the Auditor General, it was very clear, if you remember, just that day, that AG would be dealing with sugar, money, check balances, if income versus expenditure balance, all that you are able to account, then it's done. But now, the impact, like what Honorable Peter has already, where you see a department, in terms, Chair, of your accounting records, that is now for the purpose of AG, it's all perfect. But you see that there is this particular figure which went to that particular activity. Now, who audits the relevance of the expenditure? Who audits as to whether ultimately, you know, Chair, we are from Pakistan. I can narrate a short story about Transcar, where you would have a surface road of more than 100 kilometers. On paper, it is there, surface done. But when you get there, there isn't any. You know? So who then begin to audit such? So that we know that there is, at the end of the day, value for our expenditure. There is value for the money that we have actually spent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I want to ask Honorable Peters if there is a policy on informal settlements. I heard us speaking about services and informal settlements, but maybe we must look at if there is a policy for informal settlements. Because things are happening, there are town planners in municipalities and government departments, but things are just happening faster than our town planners are doing, which causes the pressure, bring the pressure on government. I would like to ask the Public Service Commissioner if there are any vacancies in the Public Service Commissioners in the nine provinces or in the post office at national, or any staff for their capacity. And the reason why I'm asking this, I was chairman of the ad hoc committee in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament dealing with the filling of the vacancy of the Public Service Commissioner for the Western Cape, and it took months and months. So I just wanted to know what is your capacity in state in having to deal with what you must deal with, and if there are any challenges there that may affect your ability to deliver to your mandate. Chairperson, I want to ask if the Public Service Commissioner, in terms of a point on slide 4, in terms of organization, the structural arrangements, if they have, if they've interrogated or assessed the proposal by the President in terms of restructuring of departments and what impact it will have on service delivery and efficiency or cost saving, point that they raised there. Then I note the point on the review of non-core, particularly the porters in hospitals. It's like unheard of that could be declared non-core services. And the teacher ratio, which was raised as an example, is very critical. You know, if you want to have a good education outcome, and I appreciate that point that was raised. I want to support the previous questions, but want to ask on the non-compliance of financial the framework. Is there any lack of consequence management with regard to these HODs or senior members that are senior management that do not comply with the regulations in terms of non-compliance by declaring or disclosing and even not submitting their documents? Chairperson, I've heard a comment about the performance rewards. Now, in an economy where I'm of the opinion that the performance bonuses was brought in because the economy was good, our growth was good, because you get staff and you get contracts and then 13 paychecks and whatever is in there, and later on we added performance bonuses, which I feel we should, and the point was raised that it should be phased out, but it should be brought in line with performance in that particular state-owned entity. If there's performance, then so be it. If it's non-performance, then there should be no performance rewards. So that's a principle that we have to get right through to the public sector and federal entities, in particular senior management. So I welcome that idea But I think where we sit now, listening to the Public Service Commission, the Parliament Budget Office, as well as the National Treasury or the Financial Fiscal Commission, we sit now with the implementation phase. We need examples as how we can do that. For example, on page 21, we speak about capacity building and the need to build that capacity. Organizational, technical. Now, it's a general statement, but I think we need to know where's the capacity required, out of what reports to envisage capacity, because if we are a developing state and we set goals, then we need to have that capacity. But it would be interesting to from your side now, where's the lack or the shortage of capacity in the public service? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will join other honourable members in welcoming the presentation. And the many ways it was presented, it's a short presentation, but it gave detailed information as we have expected. Chair, I'll start first on slide 3 with regards to the mandate of the Commission. The last sentence speaks to oversight mandate, and it says it also gives direction. I'm interested to know if whether the directions have some element of punitive measures in them, or are they just support and corrective? And the reason I'm asking this, Chair, it's for me to test what happens to some of the revelations that come to the office of the PSC. I'll cite an example from my past involvement in local government, where we have detected officials that do business with the state would write a formal letter, leave those particular individuals, leave the department, leave the contract, leave the amount, and submit it to the Public Service Commission. So the question that follows would be, when you receive such, what then do you do? Because we have realized that the question that was asked by the presenter was, why would the non-disclosure of financial disclosures as required on page 11 happen? Is there information that maybe we're not supposed to know? And the answer is an affirmative yes. What we have picked up, as I indicate from my past involvement, was that most of these individuals, and we picked a figure trend in the Department of Health, is that some of these individuals do not go to work. They go to their businesses, and they run these businesses through their department. So they sit there, award themselves contracts in government, and then eventually draw from the same place. They draw a salary and they draw contracts. So that could be the reason. If you were to check on all of the letters that came from the City of Swan with regards to contravention of those particular prescripts, particularly of the MFMA, you realize that health is one of the biggest culprits. Chair, the second point is again related to the mandate. I know the previous one, I hopped from the mandate to the function. But I also want to find out from the PSC, how responsive is the Commission as far as the current affairs are concerned? The President will make a SONA, will present the SONA and make certain pronouncements. In terms of your oversight, how then do you ensure that there's realignment by the Department to those particular pronouncements that are made by the President? The third one, Chair, is on the issue of human resource on page 7. I'm interested to know how involved is the PSC in terms of ensuring that there is standardized way of measure? Because I think you have come across a department which on authority can speak on how they have a policy, how they implement the policy, how they ensure that indeed performance is measured. And I'm interested to know, how would this then be linked to what Comrade Peters raises, that you find a department underperforming broadly, but one unit in the department performs and demands a budget. And obviously there are bargaining issues on the side where we discuss issues of increments. Whereas I know that it's apple and bananas, even to compare in the private sector, there will be periodical performance management, rating, scoring, and then we can start discussing rewards based on performance in terms of the scoring. So I'm interested to know if whether do we have any idea if whether is there a framework or a standardized policy in terms of how performance is measured. The reconfiguration of government has been covered. And then Chair, I just have one last one. On page 17, the understanding by department, I know that other members have raised this particular issue, but I think it's important that we underscore this issue and then maybe ensure that from this committee, we assist the Sixth Parliament to ensure that this do not continue. I mean, one of the biggest challenges that we have in the country is unemployment, it's inequality, and it's also lack of penetration by small players in the economic mainstream. But then we have the Department of Small Business Development underperforming on its spending. We have an environmental threat by deforestation. We have issues of poaching of our maritime resources. But then again, we have the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forest and Fisheries underperforming. So I'm not sure if whether our departments are alive to what is really happening as we speak. And hence I'm saying that I hope that the Sixth Parliament will be responsive and alive to these challenges so that where spending can be the solution, it is done that's executed in a manner that will assist the department. Oh, no, I apologize. I said about the last one. This is the last one. On page 15, I'm interested to know the related cost for the officials that are on suspension. Do these costs include the salary adjustment of those officials in the event that they have to act in a senior position? Because I know that when I'm a level 3, a level 4 is suspended, when I move from 3 to 4, then my salary is adjusted in order to compensate for the extra workload. But the other opportunity cost that our people suffer is that production where I am actually employed will slow down because of the extra additional work that I have to do. So I think it's important that maybe we get clarity as far as there is concerned. And Chair, the other risk, as the slide speaks, but does not go deeper into detail, to say that the departments are not dealing promptly with disciplinary processes. The little experience that I have is that there are time prescripts in terms of the Labor Relations Act. They need to put someone on precautionary suspension on this day. By this day, there should be charges. The process should be unfolding. So we are sitting with the situation that the lack of speed in resolving these issues is actually robbing our residents and communities the opportunity to be serviced. And then the same people return to work because this case would have been expired and cannot hold in a court of law or whatever forum they will be required to make a pronouncement on the said conduct. So I think it's very important that this particular slide we take it to heart and ensure that as this committee and together with the TSC we are then able to assist where we can. Thank you very much, Chair. I will close there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Just before I give the Commission opportunity to respond on the clarities and the inputs engaged on the presentation, let me also further go into these areas.
You see, the I don't think the performance of an individual should be necessarily be measured against the performance of the economy, because the individual enters into a contract with the employer, and I believe that now there is supposed to be some sort of an agreement of what are the targets that one has to meet in terms of that performance. But then if Honorable Joseph, you put it solely on the shoulder, the performance on the economy is rather be a burden, a serious one. But let me go to this question for clarity. You know, during the question and answer session this week, there's an issue on violence against women and children. That scares, it's actually escalating to an extent that now the people are calling for more involvement of police to combat such a serious crime. And as a result, the president was calling for the minister of police to ensure that more police are being employed to back up the current staff in the public service, especially the police. Now, why I'm talking about this, I'm reading this statement against the wage bill and cutting of administration, that isn't there contradictions, because now pronouncements have been made at this level, but then there's always a continuous appearance of a bloated wage bill and cutting of administration, etc. So I want you to talk to that, but how do you understand that? Unless we see, you tell us what was to be a supposed wage bill compared to what? Maybe we have to talk on that particular point, and hopefully these issues are issues that are actually at the end of the day found its expression at relevant platforms to explain to those platforms what you understand or comprehend around the issue of huge wage bill and cutting of administration. I'm referring to the organized labor. Now, you see, when the HODs do not account or refuse when an instruction is being issued, it's a serious transgression, because you are talking to an HOD of the department, must. I don't think the instruction says may. Unless maybe the public service commission convinced the committee that your instructions or the instructions are always may. But my understanding where one is seated is the instructions say must. So now if you see this number of HODs not prepared to comply with the issue of disclosure of interest or late submission, what are they leading now? What are they leading? Who can they tell now to lead to this to discipline? So it's a serious transgression, this one, which actually you were supposed to tell us they understood the instruction as must, not may. And therefore, the Public Service Commission has then clamped down on them. Because we can't be asked this question or be just told to put it. People are failing, are not complying. It's not the responsibility of this committee. We're supposed to ask you then, to what an extent have you clamped down on these people who are not willing to account on the election?
The issue of, let's go to the last slide. On the last slide, you're asking us on the reconfiguration of the department, what are the efficiency prospects of the for the reconfiguration? In fact, this question was supposed to ask you. You're supposed to tell us about that question. And also about to what an extent has the AG implemented. You can't ask us. We're supposed to ask you. You're supposed to give us answers. So we're expecting that you provide us or assist us with the answers to what I'm told. The AG has just implemented this public audit amendment act. So you're supposed to tell us, give us answers on that one. So now, I just wanted to ask those few, the issue of consultants outsourcing the responsibility which the department, government department has already, it's an extraordinary cost, that one, because already you've got people who are employed there, like your advocates or legal personnel in the department, but you, then there is this situation that you're saying, then we have to get lawyers or legal people to come and beef up the department. So it's a serious one, and cap cost of, you know, the one that you gave us as a during the presentation, 148.6 million was used for legal services. So it's a very real serious concern for this committee to note, which was not supposed to have, because we have got people that have been employed in the government department. So I think I just wanted to make comments that before you proceed with the responses. Maybe we'll come later. I'll still follow up a question. We'll check on the time. Can I give the Public Service Commission to respond on the issues that have been raised? Thank you.
Maybe in terms of what the chairperson has said, in line with the non-compliance of the accounting officers, maybe if we know the mandate, the mandate of the PSC in terms of that, maybe they would tell us, given their mandate, as to what exactly is it that they should do, or what should the committee then do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Some of the questions are overlapping, and I think we will deal with them as they have been put forward. This department should parliament support and all the council. What type of additional support needed the DPSA?
Can you just speak closer to the mic?
Oh, okay.
Recording can be enhanced.
Okay. One of the questions is which department should Parliament support and hold accountable as per the presentation, and what type of additional support is needed for the DPSA? The support that and accountability holding that the Parliament would need to provide to this department that we have identified, I think one of them being water and sanitation, human settlement, defense, military veterans, and it's quite a number, because if we're going to limit the support to only 3 or 5 or 6 departments, we'll be doing an injustice. This department needs to be engaged with. They need to be called, because this information comes from them. We did not from Circuit. It is information that they provided, which is information that is there in the public domain, it is in the annual report. We are, as the PSC, engaging these departments. Part of what we recently have been doing is engagement with the Rural Development and Land Affairs, where they have quite a number of challenges, and we're trying to, both of us, to share ideas and assist them on how they should deal with these problems. With the DPSA, I think after the coming into office of the sixth administration, the situation has drastically changed. The minister himself is very much accessible. He is on a number of occasions. He has pronounced in DPSA events and PSC events where he was invited as a keynote speaker. He has pronounced that he is readily available to support the PSC, and he has even given us his targets, and he has given us the responsibility that before the end of, I think, 2020, we're supposed to have held at least two or three meetings, and he wants to see the PSC participating very close with the DG of the DPSA. So some departments, there is positive response, there's positive cooperation, and I think we are in 6 months' time, when we meet again, we'll be telling a different story with most of the departments. Most of what we are reporting on here, it is the information of the 2018-2019 financial year, and a lot that has happened, we are engaging departments on a regular basis. Financial disclosures by EAs, HODs. Now, these financial disclosures, they start, they are dealt with in departments. And then the HODs are supposed to receive them and hand them over to the EAs. Of course, there are deadlines, and in some departments, HODs fail to submit or to load these financial disclosures on the targeted date, and the date when it's a deadline is a deadline. Sometimes the HODs themselves, they will be submitting to EAs, and EAs don't act on this financial disclosures, and we are left with very little to do here but to report this conduct to either provincial legislators, to provincial, to parliamentary committees. But at the same time, we do engage with the executive authorities our dismay, they will be explaining all sorts of excuses, and when the reports come out, of course, they are not what they like, and it's not what even the provinces or national departments are happy about. But then we report on what we have been given when we required information. Payment of invoices. Score to make follow-ups with the identified departments. We very much agree with this. We also are engaging with the identified departments. And reasons that are being advanced by most of the accounting officers, and including EAs, there is commonality in some of the reasons, because some of the reasons would be change of details when it comes to the service provider, especially banking details, addresses, and some of the reasons they would give would be that they, when they have to be paying the reasons are lying directly in the department because priority will be given to some payments to be done. We are not leaving it at that. We don't accept reasons for non-payment of valid invoices because this are services that have been provided by these companies, and these companies need to have healthy cash flows. So we don't leave this to chance, and in our quarterly bulletin that we produce every quarter, these culprits are flagged on a regular basis. And this is also part of us reporting to the public service throughout, to Parliament, and also to the public out there, so that they see the problems that we're facing in dealing with this department.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, Honorable Chairperson. I will also add on some of the issues that Commissioner has responded to. So the issue around which departments should be supported, I think Commissioner has already alluded to some of those departments, including your water and sanitation, military veterans, and so on. But I think the most important thing, again, we need a much stronger center of government. We need a DPSA that is much stronger with capacity to be able to go into departments and to assist if there is a problem. We need a treasury that is able to get out of its comfortable space as well and be able to go and assist where there is a problem, so on and so on. But one also must mention, in all honesty, Honorable Chairperson, this issue around departments that need support is that when you look into the Constitution, it does say that we need to invoke Section 100 for provinces that are not performing, Section 139 for municipalities that are not performing, and we are not saying anything about national departments, as if national departments are performing at all times, where else they have got problems. We need to come up with a provision that says, where departments are not performing at national, how do we, in a proper way, deal with those departments? Having said that, again, there is an issue that we need to consider around the non-performance of departments, which is the political administrative interface. If we are going to have HODs that are changed now and then, you have got acting people who are scared to make decisions, who are acting for a month, next month, we are also changing departments are in that cycle all the time, we're going to have problems. To move on to the issue of the financial disclosures, the issue of financial disclosures is an example of how government is saying we need to improve a high standard of professional ethics. Now, the problem that we have is that the FDF are disclosed to the minister. The minister is the one that is supposed to send the form to the Public Service Commission so that the Public Service Commission can do a scrutiny on those forms and go back to the minister, having looked at all the sources that we consider, such as your CPIC, your Central Supplier Database, if the HOD or if the official ID that we don't pick up there, and cards and so on and so on, so that we can be able to say the status of this official in terms of the number of cards that they have and da-da-da, or their name in the SD, Central Supplier Database, suggests that they do business with the state. Minister, we want you to act on this one. The recent data that we have for 17-18, we are finding that certain ministers are responding back to the PSC to say we have taken disciplinary actions on those officials that we have found to have potential or actual conflict of interest. However, on those that are actually doing business with the state, we know that a pronouncement has been made that they should leave. So there is no negotiation about that, except that where officials are doing, have got potential conflict of interest. But this issue of your FDF and the high standards of professional ethics, we also need to look at it from a different angle. We say we can't always be looking at compliance on compliance, because the real corruption and fraud doesn't happen on paper. I'm not going to say that I received a brown envelope yesterday and therefore I'm going to disclose. So our mechanisms
in government, particularly those officials that we've appointed as ethics officers in department, shouldn't only be looking at pushing the paper and saying somebody has disclosed, somebody has not disclosed. They should be much sharper in understanding the mandates of their departments. What are the ethical dilemmas that departments will find themselves in, and how do we deal with those things so that we avoid the situation where we have to appear with in front of commissions because we have erred in a particular sector? If you take health, we had the Mamelodi Hospital, we had a lady that was tied. It's an ethical issue. It cannot happen in a hospital where nurses who have got a profession such as the nurse, they take an oath and so on. When they get to work at public servants, they just forget all those kind of things. People who come to work, they're not working. It's a professional issue. It's a professional ethics issue. But the problem again that we have, Chairperson, if I could touch whilst I'm on this matter, on the issue of consequence management, we are not managing in government. We are co-managing with officials, we are co-managing with unions, and there is a problem in that area. And other officials, obviously, they get into the space of politics. As I move on, Chairperson, so just to enhance the issue that was raised by Commissioner Leballo on the issue of non-payment of invoices, we, Public Service Commission, would really appreciate the assistance of this committee. We are inundated with a number of service providers who says, I've not been paid, I've not done this. So the culture is so bad that we don't take calls of service providers. Across, a person will tell you, nobody's responding to me, nobody's taking my calls, nobody, the department, we just shut them out completely. We don't even talk to them, frustrate them, and they have got no way to go. And the idea is go to the court, and we know very well that they cannot go to the court because they don't have money. We are prepared to go to the court because I earn my salary at the end of the month, it's paid by the state, and they have to generate funds to go to court, which they don't have. Now, Commissioner has alluded to most of it, and when we deal with the service provider, we do ask them, in your view, why do you think you're not being paid? In some instances, it's genuine reasons where there is no capacity in the department, there is no delegation, which means if Irene goes on leave for a whole month because it's the one that has got the final payoff, that 30 days, it lapses, and the person is not paid. But at the core of it, again, we need to be honest, it's corruption. If you don't bribe me, I'm not going to pay, and I'm going to frustration. That is the reality. Now, on the issue of performance bonus generally, the system, we need to be honest, it doesn't work. So what happens there is that I contract with my supervisor. So when I contract on the things that I am responsible for as an individual. And my contribution is obviously going to be minute as opposed to the bigger organizational imperatives. Now, what happens again, and we need to go back to our planning framework, we are guided by the APP. So we are going to contract on those auditable, countable targets. So I've done so many workshops. I've produced so many reports. I've ticked all those things. What do those things tell us? If you've done those things, it's fine. Then give yourself a score of 3, which means you've been efficient. It's only when we interrogate beyond the auditable and whatever that we need to say, you have produced this piece of legislation. There was public participation. It was approved. It's being implemented. It's really helping us to achieve the things that we want to do. Therefore, you've been over and above efficient. But officials in government is that for coming to work, we want a score of 3. It's efficient. Just for coming to work, before we even do anything. And that's what it is. And managers, as I said earlier on, that we are not managing. They come to the moderation committee. They will tell you that I've got a problem with so-and-so, they're not performing. They come to the moderation committee with the performance assessment that says the person has got a score, you have got a bonus. Then you really want it. How do you present somebody for a bonus when, on daily basis, when we want to, 1, 2, 3, 4, you say the person doesn't perform? Mm. So those are some of the things that we're really battling with. When you look at the bigger picture, you realize that we are not managing. Even the performance management system is not working. And one really welcomes the determination that is made by the minister that, you know what, maybe let's remove this bonus. Because people are coming to work to get a bonus, not to get any salary. As we move on to the issue around where does the backstop when we have got
things that are supposed to happen and are not happening. So at much higher level, you've got the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, which is responsible. You have got Public Service Commission to a certain extent. We also do what we call service delivery inspections. Although in our case, we may not necessarily have the capacity to be there across the country. But each and every department has got a unit called Monitoring and Evaluation. And I don't think we have really clarified what is the role of that unit of Monitoring and Evaluation. At the moment, we prepare strategic plans, we prepare APP. We are just compliance-driven because presidency wants the APP at the end of the quarter. So have we met this target? Then we think. We are going to Parliament to report on our APP. The MNE people are supposed to get out of the office and go and MNE the programs of the department, and we are not doing that. We are sitting and just making sure that Auditor General wants this, then we take, we submit. And actually, managers, please give us input. Please give us input. We send to President who has met our targets. Those targets, nobody actually sees on the ground whether they exist, whether they have taken place. Evaluation is even something else. We do not even say the intention of this program was to do 1, 2, 3, 4. As a department, the responsibility lies with the department. As a department, have we really gone back and seen that the implementation of this program has really helped us arrive at the intended objective? Then we move to something else. So it's a problem. There was an issue raised, Chairperson, around... just to go back around the issue of the PMDS, the other challenge that we have is that PMDS at the level of the head of department is not working. Many of these HODs and DGs are not even assigned. If you meet a couple of them, they will tell you that I was assessed 3 years ago or whenever. So they don't perform, they don't submit, some of them, they don't submit their performance agreements. As I say, some of them, they're not even assessed. So it has to start there so that ministers hold DGs accountable, so that if your audit outcomes are negative, you get to be punished through the PMDS. But those assessments are not taking place. Now, on the issue of the related cost to suspensions, this one is a very painful one. So we cannot, government doesn't allow that a person will get an acting allowance if somebody is suspended and I'm acting doing the duties of my supervisor who has been suspended, because that post is not vacant. And because it's not vacant, that person is drawing a salary if they're not there. So we can, it's only when the post is vacant that one is appointed to act, then we can give a percentage of the acting allowance. So what is happening is that those that are staying in the system, they have to do the work once the other one is earning a salary. The issue of how we deal with disciplinary, it's an issue of labor relations. You see, if you look at a couple of indicators for the performance of departments, which is your HR, which is your finance, which is your accountability measures, your IT, and so on, HR at all times is always at the bottom. We have got an issue around labor relations across the entire public service. You look at the number of grievances that officials send to the Public Service Commission. It's unbelievable. So there is an issue generally around HR and its practices, how we recruit, how we do performance management and so on, and how we deal with issues of labor relations. So it's a matter really that needs attention. The issue, Chairperson, that you raised around the wage bill, at the moment we look at the statistics of the wage bill from PESA. So we look at the national and provincial departments. And in the minister made an argument in the MCBPS that around 29,000 officials are earning above $1 million and so on. Now, the likelihood is that you'll have what we call level 13 to level 16, which is your director to your director general. Obviously, you have got people who are deputy directors who have been on this bench for quite a long time, who have encroached in the senior management services in terms of their salary because of not increasing all the time. But if you look at the public service, just the public, national and provincial departments, you're basically talking 13 to 16, you're talking just 10,000 people that are in that category. So the reason why I'm saying that is because
the amount of money that goes to paying people. It is in the public service at management level, because with our new dispensation, when we carried on, we created that bend and we incentivized it so that people could earn better, so that they could manage better and so on. Whether that is the outcome that we're getting at the end of the day today is something else. That's why you find your police being in smaller numbers, not smaller but not at the required numbers and so on. But the issue again is we also need to look into your SOEs. We have got about 700 SOEs and public entities and so on. All of them, they've got board members, they've got a CFO, they've got a CEO. The amount of money paid to a CEO is not even closer to amount that is paid to a director general. So we are not putting those figures here. I'm not even talking about local government. And the issue again that we're saying is whether we need all of those SOEs, because some of them, in all honesty, can be subsumed within the department and even be managed better as a program. So I think we do need a proper study around the issue of the wage bill. We need Treasury, we need DPSA and all other relevant institutions to come across the table and say, for a country such as South Africa, where you've got 57 million, what is the rationale for a public servant serving the public? And where do we need all these people, and where do we don't need those? So there is a study really. That is why you find it a little bit difficult here and there, then cut, but don't cut, and so on, because we haven't really done a proper study that would tell us what is happening in this space. The Public Service Commission's mandate is to do oversight. So we do oversight. The responsibility for running departments, if you look at Public Service Act, is with ministers. So we do oversight, we report to ministers, we highlight all these issues that we say to ministers. And what we do again, we come and report to Parliament, as we are reporting now that we are being frustrated by this department and that department, because they are not doing what they are supposed to be doing. So in a sense, that is the challenge that we have. But more so, that would happen after we have had several engagements. We write letters in the Public Service Commission. We request meetings with ministers and so on. But we are also constrained in some areas where we do not have a budget to pursue certain things that we should be pursuing in the bigger scope of things. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure whether do you still have to, you have something to follow up on the responses given by the Director General and the Chairperson of the Commission on their input, so that we can really go to the second item on our agenda. Can I determine whether you have still follow up? Can I note hands on follow up so that I don't come back and say
noted. Thanks, Chair. It's not a follow up, can I say? It's a proposal which seeks to say understanding that we will, on a quarterly basis, be interacting with PSC. But if then, constant liaison could be done, not necessarily on a face-to-face kind of an arrangement, that encourage a commissioner, particularly shared between now and the budget day, that if there are other issues that they would like to raise with us as the Standing Committee on Appropriations, they do so in writing. Because it may so happen that because of the tight schedule, we are unable to interact like this before mid-February. Thanks, Chair.
Joseph. Thank you, Chairperson, for the second opportunity, and thank you for the responses. I'm really worried by the statement made by Public Service Commission in that the government what is the exact word, the government is governing, the government is co-managing with the unions. Serious statement, Jacob. And I don't know what it means, but what I'm interested in is, I'm interested in the essential services. How far did public service come with unions or the government or the interstate department as to what is essential services? Because I think that is where it breaks down, the misunderstanding of what is essential services, because it's about life and death if we speak about the health services, for example. Life and death. So I would like to know what is the understanding, what we should we know about essential services, and what should we pursue as members of parliament to make sure that the public gets their services from government, essential government services. But that statement is worrisome, and I would like to, I think, have a discussion on that or get more information about it, if they need help or must give us a direction as to their understanding what how different it should be than this statement of government is co-governing with unions. Thank you.
Honourable Peter.
Thank you, Jefferson. I just want to find out from the Commission, in the work that you have done over the years, probably 5-10 years or so, are there departments that you can say have best practices and lessons for other departments? And I know that you've got what you call public service awards, and you sometimes, do you have departments that have over the years been repeatedly awarded for best performance? I know there are some that would get the AG's awards and your own awards. So it would be good for us to know that. And Jefferson I thought I said something that you didn't like. And maybe what can be shared between those departments and these others that have been consistently underperforming and having challenges. I'm looking at a situation like the Department of Defense. It emerges in quite a number of those that does not meet targets, that spend the budget above 90%, and it also emerges under those that did not declare their financial business, including the public service and administration. Again, in your view as the Public Service Commission, does the 2019 MTVPS make sufficient proposals and adjustments that will enable government to realize the developmental priorities as encapsulated or envisioned in the National Development Plan Vision 2030? And in your view as the Public Service Commission, we are in the year 2019, 11 years towards 2030. What is it that you could actually say in the NDP needs a revision so as to be able to make sure the departments can then be able to deliver within maybe the projected target of the NDP? Yeah, that's it.
Not sure if this will respond, so long as the commission is coming.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me say something before she says anything. Best practices in departments, if we can enumerate one or two. These are departmental activities. These are departmental practices which we very much support. For one simple reason. For departments to identify best performing employees, because much as we say there is so much that is lacking, there is poor service delivery, which extends to non-service delivery on the ground. The truth and the fact of the matter is, they are in the shadow, they are dedicated employees on the ground and who have made the public service the career of choice. Now, these best practices, there are done departmental practices where best performing employees are identified and awarded. It is helpful, very much helpful in boosting the morale of the very public servants and even those who would aspire next time to also receive this award as a recognition of good practice. The one question that was asked, and I want to respond to it, is about the directions of the PSC. The PSC is directions. It's part of the functions of the PSC and Section 186. The directions of the PSC are binding. And the...
Honorable Chairperson, before the chair of the Public Service Commission walks on, I'm interested in knowing whether there is departments. I know that there are public servants who could be said are doing their work. Yeah, that's why we're still standing. But is there departments in South Africa that can say, this is the cherry on top? These are the ones that we can say, if every department did what Department X is doing, not individuals, the department, then we are on the right track.
Chair, be frank and be very open. There seems to be none. No department that we can say this one has done very well and deserves an award. There seems to be none. Chair, I am a commissioner. The Public Service Commission. I'm not the chairperson.
Oh, okay.
I will be, if the chairperson can hear that, already I've taken over. I think I will be in serious trouble. I am just an ordinary commission. So, chairperson, I was saying the directions are by
you. No, but he's presenting the chairperson.
Chairperson,
I think I've been warning from the back, so.
No, you are protected. You can proceed.
Okay. I was saying the directions are by you. For example, if in a department a irregular appointment takes place and then it's brought to the attention of the PSC and the PSC handles it, and the person gets appointed and this is irregular, all the investigations leads to the fact that this person is regularly appointed, the PSC finally, when it comes out with a direction, the direction would be that the EA should, because the department has failed to deal with the matter, that is why it was brought to us. Direction would be take the matter to the labor court where it is, it will be finally concluded. And the labor court order is final in that aspect. And this is where the direction comes in. Recommendations that the PSC makes, which are also part of the mandate of the PSC, left to the discretion when it comes to implementation, to the discretion of the executive authorities. In most instances, the EAs, they implement them and they agree with them, but there are instances where they don't agree and they don't implement them, but they are bound. They are bound by the prescripts to give reasons as to why they are not implementing and they don't agree with the recommendations. Otherwise, the situation is such that it doesn't end there when the recommendation is not implemented. The PSC needs to be finished with all the necessary reasons. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to revisit first the issue of the union, because I think it's a very specific issue and it needs to be really contextualized. So public servants have got their rights like any other
citizen in the country, the labor relations does protect them to have their rights, and their rights must be respected in the workplace. But we need to have space for managing because we are at work, and we also need to create space for dealing with labor relations in a fair manner. The problem comes where we are not able to manage because, to a certain extent, management is not able to deal with labor. That's where the problem comes in. I'll make an example. We had an incident at Charlotte Matlega Hospital where officials down told they went and blocked the door of a theater where an operation was supposed to take place. Now, who is managing this? Who's running the hospital? And that's what I mean, and I needed to put that very clearly so that it is understood. So if we are not able to run institutions and we have got our labor running institutions, then the management is really black. So I really needed just to clarify that one. But be that as it may, public servants have got their rights. Their rights have to be respected, and we need to treat them fairly. We need to treat them with respect, and so on and so on. But we need to make a distinction when as a manager I'm supposed to tell a person you're not doing your work and we are going to underscore you and give you an underperformance and put you on a plan to help you. To be able to do that without fearing that now I'm going to be reported to the news, I'm going to be dealt with, and so on. Honorable Peters, the issue around whether we have made the appropriate adjustments to respond to the NDP, I think it's, I must be honest, it's a bit of a difficult one really to give an answer and say yes for obvious reasons that the economy is not doing well. We would have wanted to have more money to do the things that we're supposed to do, and with the adjustments we can only try. I doubt very much that we'll be able, if you look at the requirements of the National Development Plan in terms of everything that we're supposed to do. The revision of the NDP has taken place over the last MTSS period. I'm not sure whether Cabinet has already approved it, but we have revised the second plan of the NDP, which is what we are implementing. It has just been approved recently, obviously based on the revision. I'm not sure where the revision is at the moment, but we have revised the NDP, and we've also learned lessons from the previous administration in terms of how we implemented the NDP, and I think we are hoping for the best going forward.
Thank you very much, members and the Public Service Commission. With the presentation that you made before us, and you surely said to us that there is a need to assist you in some difficult areas, such as the one of interacting with the department, especially on the critical areas of, on intervention areas such as performance by the department, because the public service is the confront of the service delivery. And you are also saying that now we have to assist in as far as ensuring that the issue of delegation of authority is being emphasized during our engagement with the department, so that is fast track, such that the service delivery is being enhanced. So you actually also telling us that now you are bothered by the area of monitoring and evaluation that seems to be not being assistful. So that's the area that we're inviting the community also to come in to ensure that that area is being engaged. And if need be, calling individuals to come and an account before the committee. You also reflecting to us that now there has to be a way that as far as that in as far as wage being is being done, so that we know what is actually informing
the statement every time when you say the wage bill is bloated or like this and that. But at least we there must be some scientific study that informs from which premise do we move or do you move when you say the bill is it has expanded. Now you are also saying that to us you are bothered by the issue of inconsistent leadership in different departments, especially the heads of departments, that they are changing from time to time and therefore as a result affect the service delivery. And of course you have clarified that now there is an intention to review the performance management development system in the public service such that now, such that this in its current form it does not assist the department. Instead, it just is one symbol that it assists individual, which is not proven to be helpful. So I'm just highlighting some areas that you critically raised during your input and during the engagement that needs to follow up. And hopefully all those areas of misconduct and then usage of consultants in the department, various departments will be fast-tracked and clamped down such that now, because they are of cost to the department, it will be looked into. So let me just few words want to thank you very much for having come and will remain open as a committee. You'll be able to come and engage us, not wait up until there's this situation that says department refuse to submit, which is actually a transgression on its own. So you are free to engage us to assist further. So hopefully we'll meet in future when we need you and also when you need us. So thank you very much on behalf of the committee. So I'm releasing you because I'm going to enter into another space as we'll be closing our meeting very soon in the next 10 minutes. And thank you very much. You are released. We are left with 10 minutes to finish up the next item on our agenda, and hopefully members have gone through the minutes of the previous sitting. Such that we are.
I know the chairperson is at the scene. Oh, yes,
we'll be able to.
But when you are in the comments, you are representing the chairperson. You are representing the chairperson. You are accounting authority. Yes. Okay.
Mepitas, this is Africa. So if you become casual with power,
I say, I'm going to go and
please teach.
Do we all have copies of minutes? Okay, you indicate if you shot any of them. We should be having 7 sets of the minutes. Yes, it's different days. From the 9th of October, 10th of... Yeah, the 9th of... Yeah, the 9th of October, 10th of October, 22nd, 23rd, 29th.
Nine.
And we've got 2 sets of on the 29th.
Ten.
And 31, 31st of October. So I'm going to start with the 9th of October. The minutes as presented on page 1.
I don't know if the 22nd.
22nd
and 23rd.
Page 1.
Okay. So,
page
2. Can I say something? I don't have 22nd and 23rd. 9th
October.
9th, 10th, 29th. Yeah, Chokupan, yes, please. Thank you very much. I just want to make this proposal to say, we have got minutes here with us, but they've been sent to us everywhere. Hope that we are. So, for the safety of time, I recommend that from the minute that you received, having gone through them before we go to the meeting, if there's any matter that wants to be addressed, then a member should just raise their hand and say, in terms of this, we shouldn't go through page by page. Thank you very much.
I'm presenting to you the minutes of the 9th of October. Can I get the mover and the seconder of the minutes?
Chair, I've read the minutes. I move to the adopt.
I second the
minutes of the 9th. Minutes of the 10th of October. Can I get the mover and the seconder?
Mr. Chairperson, I move to adopt the minutes of the 10th of October.
Minutes agreed of the 10th of October, minutes of the 29th of October,
22nd.
Where are they? 22nd, 23rd. The 2nd of the 29th.
Yeah.
But the matter I've read the
29 is in the morning and in the afternoon.
I
take
the
minutes
of the
29,
the morning and
the
afternoon.
Okay.
Closer of the
minutes of the 29 seconds, Honorable Joseph.
For the minutes of the
31st of October, can I get the mover and the seconder? Honorable Khalid?
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 31st of October.
Thank you very much. Honorable Peter, seconder, thank you very much.
And what happened to the president?
Just
for clarity, the minutes that we have missed of the secretary, that we can just have it on the record and do it next time. Thank you.
Agreed, honorable members, that the minutes outstanding will be read in the upcoming committee meeting. Honorable?
No, thank you very much, Chair. No, I also was expecting that you'll see with other minutes when I raised my hand, because I wanted to speak on the 29th in the morning. I was on sick leave, so I just want to find out the capturing of the status of attendance. Does it matter when it is absent or apology? Because I think when I'm on study leave, on sick leave as well as study leave, I should be regarded as apology. Is it not so?
Or
is it semantics? Because
it's
it says absent.
It does matter to be recorded as we have received the apology,
yes,
indicating the reason of absence from the meeting,
yes,
but in a form of a letter of communication,
yes,
written communication. It's what I got here.
Yes. Okay. In that case, Chair, can I request that the minutes be amended accordingly?
Did you submit?
Yeah,
it's accepted.
The two groups of it.
No, you didn't submit to the committee.
They come here, well.
Yeah, you didn't submit to the committee. Yes.
But then why?
Yes.
I will submit to the now.
Yeah. Let me clarify this, honorable member, because it does happen that we shouldn't assume that apologies have come automatically, because you have talked amongst yourself that I'm not here, but it must come to the administration. Make sure follow up that it has indeed received the attention of the administration. I think it will help in future as well.
Thanks, Chair.
So, but that will be then noted. It's noted in the honourable matter.
With that, we
conclude our business today.
Will it be noted and be corrected? Because to my understanding, if ever maybe you
can. Use the mic.
If ever maybe I did not have a procedure, and what I did, I thought it was correct. I don't think I must be blamed.
Mm.
And the other thing, if from the beginning of the meeting, members we noted that the honorable member won't be here because it's going to be. To me, I take it as a
maybe this one, because now we ask the question, we did submit on the other side. Maybe we need to correct it and put an appearance. And next time, if it repeats itself, then we say he knows now to put it on.
Jefferson, I think this matter must be clarified.
And it must be done the right way. The unfortunate thing is the secretary is unable to record something that he or she does not know of. And that is what happened in this instance. And I think it is important that we correct the channel. The secretaries of MPs need also to know that if you are not going to be able to make it, they must send the apology to the committee as much as they can send us reminders of which committee is sitting at what time and which venue. They must be able to know that the member I'm supporting is not able to attend. I mean, in the past we have been told about members whose children are sick and all those, and those whose mothers in law had passed away because the notice went to the secretariat. I think it is important that we correct that. And through the WIPARI also, a complete matter, I think you have noted the issue and it helps all of us. I also have one time absent when I knew that I submitted an apology. And since then I learned that if I'm not here, I must send message to their parents. In fact, yesterday I reprimanded the WIP for something. I sent him a notice and he didn't do it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, members. I hope internally we look into that so that we don't create unnecessary problems moving forward. Thank you very much for attending the meeting. The meeting is closed. Thank you very much.